stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're tuned into the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. As usual, I'll be your host for the next hour. My name is Kingsley Kipuri. I hear that News 24 has disabled or will be disabling their comment section, so feel free to tweet us instead or give us a call on 0861-555-189.
I'm not sure we should be encouraging News 24 commenters to be engaging.
I mean, sometimes you need some hate speech on the show, you know what I mean? Let's just insult each other's mothers and so on, right? As you can tell, I'm joined by my usual partner in crime, Greg Nicholson. Good to have you as always.
Thanks for having me.
Now, today we'll be discussing, you know, something quite serious, this disease called silicosis. It's been around as long as mining and gold mining itself. It's a respiratory and lung disease that is caused from the inhalation of silica dust, which comes up or is risen during gold mining. So one experiences chest pain, fatigue, and eventually potentially respiratory failure. And it's really been something that for the past decades and almost about 100 years that miners have been facing, even at some call referred to as sort of miners' disease informally. And we've been seeing it really affecting hundreds of thousands of people who've been involved in the sector and really, really putting them in tough situations where they're not able to work again. These are people largely working in physical labor. And if you can't breathe properly and you're not able to, you know, physically exert yourself, you can't work anymore. And you can imagine the knock-on effects of that on people's families, if you're the sole breadwinner as a father or as a son and so on. So it's really something, if you picture the South African economy and what mining and the number of people involved through mining, you can just imagine the knock-on effects of that on sort of different communities. We're also joined in studio by Alan Wine, who's...
Alan Fine.
Fine, sorry about that. You can tell where my head is at. Alan, you're representing some of the mining companies that are sort of involved with this lawsuit that'll be coming up. And sort of what's the climate now in the build-up to this lawsuit?
Well, Kingsley, I'm representing 8 companies, okay. The 6 largest gold companies, plus 2 other large companies that were historically involved in gold mining. And what these companies, they got together last year with a view to seeking out a comprehensive solution to the problems related to occupational lung disease, particularly the challenges related to compensation and to healthcare. And it's really a 3-legged initiative, which I can I'll speak about each leg just briefly. First of all, we know that the Constitutional Court has said that the compensation system for mine workers suffering from silicosis is not that good, and it's a separate compensation system. There is another one. This one is falls under the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act. There's also the compensation for occupational injuries and disease, COIDA. And so the first leg is that mining companies would like to see for current and future employees moved over to COIDA, which is the superior compensation system. And we've been in dialogue with the Minister and the Department of Health so far, and will be with other parts of government.
Okay, what is this? Is this all done?
So this is the first section.
Okay.
The second leg is... Everybody knows that, including the current management, that the ODIMWIS compensation system currently covering mine workers with occupational lung disease is operating administratively not very well. And the companies are working with the compensation commissioner and the ministry and Department of Health with a view to improving the administration of that fund to ensure that workers who are eligible for compensation get their compensation sooner. The third leg relates to the litigation you talk about, and the companies have been engaged with the claimants' lawyers with a view to from the company's perspective, establishing a legacy fund that will pay kind of top up compensation to past mine workers who are eligible for compensation.
Alan, can you just, for our listeners, just tell us which mining companies you're representing here so we have an idea of what we're talking about?
Okay. We're talking in more or less alphabetical order. African Rainbow Minerals, Anglo-American South Africa, Anglo-Gold Ashanti, Harmony, Goldfields, Sibanye Gold, DRD Gold, and Village Main Reef.
Okay, perfect. So you mentioned some of the compensation conversations that are happening in the Three Lakes, but from your understanding and your conversations with the organization that you represent, is this coming from the standpoint that there is a liability on the mining companies in terms of the miners being put in situations to be exposed to this?
No, there isn't that view from the mining companies.
Okay.
If the litigation were to proceed, the mining companies would defend their cases. But
okay.
I think both for the companies and for the claimant's lawyers, it might be said, I obviously can't talk on their behalf, but we're talking about litigation that will be incredibly expensive to fund on both sides. And it could conceivably drag on for another 10, 15, 20 years, and that's not going to be helpful for either the companies or for the claimants.
Okay, I mean, now you're talking about, which I didn't actually introduce fully, the class action lawsuit that's coming up, where about 25,000 miners and former miners are sort of collectively as a body saying, you know, that the mining companies need to collectively compensate them for what's happened. We will soon... Okay, perfect. We'll be going through to Georgina Jeffson, who's an attorney from Richard Spohr. And she's sort of part of the organization that's going forward with the class action that we've just mentioned. Georgina, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Okay, perfect. Could you tell us a bit about the class action and how it's come together? How did you identify the people to represent? Basically, how do we get to where we are now?
What happened was in March 2011, the Constitutional Court handed down a judgment which basically said that gold mine workers or all mine workers have a right to sue for damages if they have an occupational lung disease caused as a result of working underground.
Mm.
And they are entitled to sue for damages, and that is in addition to what they are entitled to get from the statutory compensation scheme. So basically, with that judgment, it was called Mankai versus AngloGold Ashanti. When that judgment was handed down, it basically gave rise to this right that all former gold miners with silicosis have to sue for damages.
Mm-hmm.
So what we then did was we took steps to go out and find clients and identify class representatives in order to bring bring the class action, which is starting with the certification proceeding.
Georgina, can you tell us a little bit about that process of identifying clients for this class action? How did you come to, I think you've got, is it 25,000 clients that you're representing? How do you get 25,000 clients, and how did this sort of come about?
We focused on the former labor recruitment areas that the mining industry targeted.
Hmm.
So the mining companies recruited from certain areas, primarily Lesotho, and the Eastern Cape, which is the old Transkei, and various other areas in Southern Africa. So we set up an office in the Eastern Cape, which then went out to find mine workers who are potentially claimants or beneficiaries in the class action. And then in Lesotho, we paired up with an organization called the Mine Workers Development Agency, and they assisted us in going out and traveling throughout the city to find former mine workers who may be interested in being part of the case. We have also subsequently set up a small office in Belcombe as well, because there's obviously quite a few ex-mine workers around there. and in Botswana, because the mining company is recruited in Botswana as well.
Georgina, we've just heard from Alan Fine, who represents some of the mining companies, and he mentioned the idea that this could really drag on for a really long time. Mentioned 10, 15 years plus of dragging on with this litigation, which could potentially be, in the end, detrimental to the miners and former miners and their families with the legal proceedings for, you know, a decade potentially. What do you think of that?
Well, look, our view is that the class action is the most appropriate mechanism to resolve this issue. It's obviously a legacy issue that the mining industry needs to be addressed. And in our view, the class action is an appropriate mechanism because it allows for all people who are affected, or all former gold miners with silicosis, to become part of the class, and to where if a judgment is handed down, everyone will be bound by that judgment. So it's sort of a mechanism whereby you can include many people with similar claims in one case per se. The alternative to that is issuing thousands and thousands of individual actions. And in our view, that is going to take longer, just as long, if not longer, than a class action litigation. But not only that, that takes serious time and serious money to be litigating through the courts like that, you know, on an individual basis. So obviously we are aware that that's the industry's argument against the class action, is that it will take lots of time to resolve. But in our view, it's the most appropriate way of resolving this issue.
So, Georgina, where is the class action at right now? Because you have a big court case, court hearing coming up ahead next month. Can you just give us a bit of an indication as to where we're at now and what's up ahead?
Yes. So, in terms of our law, which is very new and in very early stages of development, we are required to bring what is called an application for class certification. So we have to apply to court and essentially ask the court to allow us to proceed on behalf of the class. So that is the first stage of a litigation which we are engaged with now. And we have a hearing in that application for class certification in October, a little bit later this year. That is where we are with the litigation.
Mm-hmm. And what do you actually want for your clients? What are you looking for?
We are looking for, we essentially would like to achieve justice in the form of damages for all the thousands of miners out there who have silicosis and who've been injured through their work underground on a gold mine.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, I think everyone would like to sort of avoid this thing being drawn out over decades potentially. Have there been engagements from these mining companies in terms of avoiding that situation? What's the attitude from the mining companies going into this?
The mining companies, well, as I think Alan Fine has made it quite clear, they're opposed to the class action mechanism, they're opposing the litigation. But what has happened is that the industry did set up, I think they released some press releases towards the end of last year. They've approached a mediator, an independent mediator, who they've appointed to essentially engage with us and liaise with us on the case and on just to discuss the issues. And we have to that extent, we have been in engagements, in discussions with the mining industry, but nothing more than that. At this stage, we're continuing with the litigation and we're planning for the hearing to go ahead in October.
Mm-hmm. Let's look forward. In terms of justice, what you want, justice and compensation for your clients, what could that mean if you win your case in terms of a monetary figure?
That's virtually impossible to say. Damages are a very subjective calculation. You know, two people might suffer from the same disease but have very different damages. So it's very difficult to put a figure. We also don't know the extent of the class. We don't know how many miners, how many people out there who may fall within the class. So I'm afraid I can't give you a monetary figure at all.
And what about in terms of the impact perhaps on litigation in the country and on perhaps the relationship between mining companies and their employees going forward? Could you speculate any on the potential this case has to change that dynamic?
Sorry, can you just say that again? What would you like?
No, no problem. You mentioned before that this is a legacy issue, right? So it's about the relationship between the miners and the mining companies over, you know, past 100 years or so. So how do you think this case could perhaps change that relationship between those two, or change litigation in the country and perhaps set precedent for future issues like this?
I think the case is an important step towards, as you say, addressing this legacy that the mining industry that has been caused by the gold mining industry. And the litigation will go a long way towards addressing that, obviously, and that's exactly what we're hoping to do. The other possible outcomes of the litigation will be to encourage companies to ensure to ensure safe and healthy underground working conditions. Mm. That's ultimately, you know, silicosis is a preventable disease, and if dust levels are controlled, you don't see silicosis. Obviously, we hope that with in establishing corporate company liability for these diseases, we will encourage companies going forward to ensure that they are safe and healthy working conditions underground. The other alternatives will be to look at the current compensation scheme governed by the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act, with a view to reforming that scheme to provide for more adequate and better compensation for mine workers who develop occupational lung diseases.
Okay, Georgina, thanks for framing that for us. We'll definitely continue to watch the case as it plays out. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye. Alan, I saw you at some point shaking your head while Georgina was talking.
I did.
I think she mentioned something right at the end. She said this is a preventable disease. And I think what of my response, what a lot of people's response is, if we're talking things that were being discussed in 1902, 1903, and it's 2015, why is this still something that people are exposed to?
Look, this is something that concerns the companies as well, and the companies have been working very hard to improve the quality of dust management over many decades. You know, one of the things about the disease of silicosis is that it is something that takes quite a long time before it manifests itself and can be diagnosed. At the moment, on average, it is taking 20 years of exposure for a mine worker, for mine workers who are ultimately diagnosed with the disease, for that disease to manifest itself. 20 years of working underground. Previous to this, it took less time, and the expanding time it's taking to become manifest in an individual's lungs is itself an indication of improved management, dust management underground by the mining companies. So what we're seeing now, in effect, are the effects of improvements that happened 20 years ago. In 2004, in the Mine Health and Safety Council, which is a tripartite body, government, organized labor, and the industry, certain targets and milestones were set in a whole lot of areas related to health and safety, including very specific targets related to silica dust underground. At the Mine Health and Safety Summit last November, at which I think I saw you, Greg, the Chief Inspector of Mine put out data which showed that those targets had very, very nearly been met overall, and the milestones or the targets given new knowledge internationally on these matters were strengthened very, very substantially, and a milestone has been set for the year 2024 for these to be met. Mm-hmm. What the 2004 milestone said was, it implied that a company or a worker worked under conditions which were set as the target. What it said is that no worker who had been unexposed prior to 2008 should be diagnosed with silicosis. To the best of our knowledge, no such worker has been diagnosed, although, you know, we need to be the first to say that it's actually too early to say that milestone has been reached, mm-hmm. because, as I said right at the beginning, it takes an average 20 years of exposure for the disease to become diagnosable. Mm-hmm. So there have been very, very substantial improvements in dust management over the decades.
So with the recent strides that you're talking about, you know, the last 10, 15 years, why is it that those advances weren't made, you know? So if we're looking at the class action now that the Richard Spohr's putting together, they've got claims dating back to 1965. Why didn't we see efforts put in much earlier to protect workers' health? Is this a case of, you know, your large mining companies making huge profits and exploiting their workers?
I think efforts were made throughout these periods and these decades. It's the fact that knowledge, scientific knowledge, technical knowledge, medical knowledge improves as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. And I hear you, but I think it's just so hard to, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Perhaps it's a bit tricky because you know you're representing. But when you have just such a lopsided relationship, right? So you have these miners and former miners who are from really impoverished areas, some areas with unemployment, you know, up to talking 70-80% unemployment, have no choice but to do whatever work they are, you know, that is available, which is often mining, and then get sick, unable to provide for their families. And then we have an industry that says, don't worry, we've been self-policing. We were just waiting for science to catch up. We promised that we're looking into it. And you wonder, is there any real incentive, aside from now that there perhaps might be monetary incentive, is any real incentive to actually protect the workers?
Look, South Africa, as we know, comes from a very troubled and sad history.
Yeah.
In all sorts of ways. A history of racial discrimination, and many other issues that accompanied that. The mining industry was part of that history. I think you might agree that much of the political discourse that has happened in South Africa over the last 20 years and more has been precisely about how to remedy as far as possible the disadvantage that so many people, the vast majority of the population, suffered as a consequence of our history. We also need to worry about the future. Certainly workers who have suffered injury and disease in mining and elsewhere are entitled to fair compensation, and we're hoping that the engagements that we're having with the claimants' lawyers are going to lead to a situation where a fair outcome is reached, but it also from the company's perspective, and I think from the perspective of many, if not most, South African citizens, it needs to be a settlement that will ensure the sustainability of the industry, which, as you know, at the moment is also going through fairly trying times with commodity prices and so on. So it is a very difficult and delicate balance. There are issues related to public health care facilities in the so-called labour sending areas from which many of these workers have been recruited. This is something that which on which we will, too, no doubt, be talking to a number of stakeholders about as part of this process that the companies initiated last year.
Okay. If you're just joining us, this is the Daily Maverick Sean Cliff Central. We're just going to go into a quick break and we'll be right back.
Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're back with us on the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. Today we're discussing what is formerly known as miners' disease, silicosis. That's really inflicted a lot of mine workers and former mine workers, especially in gold mining. And we're just talking about a class action suit that's coming up and all the little pieces of it. What are the side of the mine workers and former mine workers? Do the mining companies owe them compensation for the disease they're suffering and to the loss of sort of income to them and their families? I'm joined in studio by Greg Nicholson and by Alan Fine, who's representing some of the mining companies. We'll be going through to John Stevens, an attorney at Section 27, who's representing the TAC and Sonke Gender Justice. John, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear
okay,
me?
Okay, fantastic. Yes, perfectly. Okay, perfect. John, I think the big question that I first had when sort of reading about your involvement in this is, this seems to be a case between the former miners and the mining company. So where does Section 27, TAC, Sonke Gender Justice, where do they fit into all this?
The case is between former mine workers and the mining company, but the case affects almost everybody who lives in South Africa. If you look at the nature of the mining industry, you know, in their prime, they employed about 500,000 people at a time. So you go back to communities in, you know, the OR Tambo district, the former Transkei, and you see that what the mining industries, the way they've conducted themselves, devastated entire communities. So TAC, for example, works on behalf of people with tuberculosis. Sonke Gender Justice works on behalf of equality for women. Both of them work generally on behalf of vulnerable people. And so their interests are twofold. One, in the substance of the case, because it affects women and it affects people with tuberculosis and lung disease, and it affects the right of access to healthcare services. Mm. And then second, and the class action mechanism, generally. Because the class action mechanism is a very powerful legal tool by which vulnerable people who otherwise don't have access to courts can unite and come together, and by doing so, take on big, powerful bodies or big, powerful corporations. And that's what's happening in this case. So TAC and Sonke have an interest in developing that mechanism because they work on behalf of people who will need it.
Okay, and could you just explain to us this idea of being a friend of the court? What exactly does that mean? I think we're used to someone accusing somebody of something, and one person must defend themselves. So what is this idea of a friend of the court?
Right, so the Latin for it is amicus curiae, or the plural is amici curiae. And it's an old development in common law across the world. And the idea is that you come into a case, and you're not a party, but you assist the court to reach a just outcome. And you do so by bringing in the broader public interest, by putting before them novel legal arguments or novel evidence that would otherwise not be before a court. So you're there at the discretion of the court, and you're there to help the court reach a just outcome.
And John, what sort of influence do you think TAC and Sonke joining in these cases, friends of the court, will have on both the certification coming up and the class action if it proceeds?
What kind of impact will their interest have? Well, I think it's very important. I think actually the legal argument they intend to introduce stands to significantly change the playing field. It moves the goalpost, and it shifts the debate in its focus. And I'll explain why. In Section 38C of the Constitution, there is entrenched the right to approach a court as a representative or member of a class. So basically, you have a right to approach a court in a class action through this mechanism. South Africa's Constitution is one of the only in the world that has specifically entrenched this mechanism into the legal framework. The applicants have, and I think rightfully so, approached the court and said, hey court, please certify us as a class. Mm. We are the same enough to where we should be allowed to go forward as a class. Now, we're arguing that actually they did that, and we think that's right, but they needn't have done that because they have a constitutional right to proceed directly in terms of that provision of the Constitution, Section 38C, to go directly without asking for certification. So if the court agrees with us on that, it changes how the court should think about how to analyze and deal with their request that they be certified as a class.
Okay. So basically what you're saying is there is a potential that this class action may be able to bypass the certification process and just proceed.
Close. Pretty close. So they have asked for a period that goes from 1965 to today.
Okay.
So that period precedes our Constitution. And then they've also named a number of things that my initiative has done wrong. Right, and those things are violate the Constitution, their constitutional obligations and rights, violate statutory obligations and rights, and violate common law obligations and rights. So the part that could go forward without requesting certification is the part based on the Constitution and likely post-94 or 96 when the Constitution came in. So, but if there's that piece of this class action that can go forward without certification, and we're arguing that should affect how the court thinks about the rest. I hope that makes sense.
Okay. Now, John, it was in your application to become friends of the court, the evidence from, I think it was the head of Sonka Gender Justice, was judged that will be allowed to be admitted in the certification process. Can you just tell us a little bit about what that evidence entails?
Yeah. So Dean Peacock is the executive director of Sonka, and Sonka is one of the amici in this. And basically what he's looking at is the way in which the conduct of the gold mining industry or the impact that occupational lung diseases have on women. So normally it's men that go to the mine. And traditionally they would go to the mines and then send money home to support their families. As I think was discussed earlier, so many of them came back sick. And they weren't taken care of, especially black mine workers. Obviously. And instead of either the state or the industry taking care of them as they were supposed to, you can guess who took care of them. It was the women and their families. And in order to provide this care, and silicosis is not curable, so you're watching somebody die a very slow and painful death. And so they would give up educational opportunities, professional opportunities, time for self-care, and so on and so forth. And so what this has done is it has entrenched a cycle of inequality and poverty in these areas from which the mines recruited their labor. So there's an issue as to what is just for the surviving women who have lost their spouses to occupational lung disease.
Mm-hmm. Now, John, in the studio with us is Alan Fine, as you know, who represents publicly a number of the gold companies involved in this case, and he was talking about the need for improving the compensation schemes that are available, as well as the possibility of establishing a legacy fund to help some of the mine workers with silicosis. Are those an option? Could we avoid sort of this lengthy court battle?
The parties may well reach a settlement, and that might address some of those issues, but it won't address the need to improve or change or do away with and come up with something completely different than Ojima, because this case can address what's happened in the past, so there's a legacy. But right now, Ojima is so poor that it's just entirely unjust. So and there's two ways in which it's so, and I think Alan said so earlier, but substantively, Ojima is lousy, and that's what the Constitutional Court said in the Mankaya case. You get way less money if you are the surviving family. You get no money in most circumstances. COIDA, the legislation under which almost everybody else in South Africa would claim under, provides money for the family in funeral cover, a pension, so forth. Ojima gives you none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the lump sum OGMA pays out to you is very is much, much lower. And then administratively, nobody gets their money anyway under ODMWA. Mm-hmm. Best thing we have show about 1.5 to 2.5% of people who are certified as eligible for compensation under ODMWA are accessing that compensation. Mm-hmm. So the people who are certified as eligible, those are the ones we know, and much less the ones we don't even know who are eligible.
Now, John, Alan's in the studio, and he was sort of nodding as you spoke. Alan, you want to jump in?
Yeah, well, we touched on this a little earlier in the show where I said that as one of the three legs of the activities that these eight companies are engaged in, one, their preference would be for current and future workers to in fact be shifted over and covered by the COEDA compensation system. So I think on this matter, John and I are in agreement. And also, as you know, this the second leg we spoke about earlier was to do with the administrative shortcomings of the ODMWA compensation scheme, which is something we are working with the compensation commissioner to try and fix, because shifting to COEDA can really only assist current and future employees. We do need to see to the compensation entitlements of the past employees.
Mm-hmm. John, so you guys agree on something at least?
That's right.
Now, John, just want to touch into something before we let you go. You said this case that could affect the whole of South Africa. I just want you to expand on that a little bit, because it seems, you know, you're looking at a case against mine workers and a case against big mining companies. How does it affect the whole country?
Well, okay, part of it has to do with just the scope of the gold mining industry in South Africa. As I said, at its height in the 80s, it employed 500,000 people. You know, that's been going down, but this is an industry that is, you know, defined and just been a major player in the South African economy. Second, this can change. So, you know, this class action lawsuits developed in this context. You know, post-industrial, very, very large corporations, they employ hundreds or thousands upon thousands of employees, and for lack of a better word, mostly low-level employees. Mm. This is the new dynamic. You know, corporations have a lot of power, and these, for lack of a better word, low-level employees, of whom there are thousands, have very little power. And this is what the class action mechanism developed to address. It said, we are going to address this disconnect between the power of employees and employers. So that's one thing this case could do, is it could set a precedent through which other, you know, people who are powerless or perceive themselves to be powerless could unite together to take on power and address the wrongs that were done to them by powerful individuals. And it can do that within the gold mining industry, but it could also do that to other industries. So I think there's a lot of promise here.
I hear you, John, and I think we're all really hoping for that sort of that justice you've mentioned, so we'll really just continue to watch the case as it evolves.
John?
Yep.
Just before we let you go, I just want to ask one more thing. Sorry, I just want to jump in. John, is it a concern from the claimant side, or you know, those on the side of the class action and the parties who have been allowed to join the Friends of the Court, the struggles the gold mining industry is facing at the moment? Is that something that's being talked about? Oh, you know, these guys are facing difficult challenges. You know, production's gone down, the number of employees they employ has gone down. Do you guys talk about that, or is it sort of like we must find justice? And that's for the gold mining companies to sort out their own side of the issue.
There's a few different things I want to say about that. I want to, one, first warn against missing who the victim is here. The victim is not the industry. The victim is the hundreds of thousands of people whom the industry caused to have deadly lung diseases when they knew it was going to happen. This industry knew about these diseases since the early 1900s, and they employed people who didn't know about it, and they let them get these diseases and die. Now, so I don't want to lose sight of who's the victim here, but there is a concern. You know, the gold mining industry is an important player in the economy of South Africa, and if you ask the man in the Bode, whether he wants the mines to shut down, he's going to say no because he wants a job. So that's the concern there. But, you know, if we look back to sort of the Marikana debates or the debates that arose after that, and you saw the mining companies saying there's no way we can afford these to meet these demands of these minimum wages. There's no way it would shut us down. And then all that turned out not to be true, and there was excellent research done that showed that actually the mining companies could easily afford it. So the second part of my answer is I would be wary about their claims about, you know, their doomsdaying about we're going to go out of business and we can't possibly afford this and so forth. You know, I don't have the answers there. There's some research that needs to be done, but we have precedent in the past to show that it's been a little tricky there. And then the third thing I want to say in response to this is, you know, this is a very important economic player. But if we can't do it ethically, if we can't do it safely, if we can't do it in a way that enriches everyone instead of a very few, then it's not worth doing. If it only enriches a small handful of people while it puts a great number of them in their graves and leaves their families without fathers and husbands, then it's not worth doing. So unless we can do it in a way that's fair and that enriches everyone, then I'm not too concerned.
There's nothing really more to add, John. Thank you so much for making time for us.
All right, thank you.
Okay, perfect. Alan, I'm curious to hear your response to that.
On the last point that John makes, I think every CEO in the mining industry would agree. I can't talk on behalf of all of them, of course, but I think in this era when and it perhaps wasn't always within the thinking of their ancestors and all of their predecessors, but all mining executives today would say, yes, we need to be able to do our work. We need to be able to produce a reasonable return for our shareholders. Otherwise, they wouldn't wish to be shareholders. And we have, as a matter of principle, to be able to do that without in a manner that every mine worker returns home every day uninjured and healthy.
And the idea that the claims that the affordability is could really put the industry or perhaps the people you represent out of business, the idea that that's exaggerated. And
well, this is something that if the litigation proceeds, no doubt the courts will have to think about, but yeah. If engagements between the companies and the claimants' lawyers were to proceed and bear fruit, how one reaches the balance between a fair settlement for the claimants and the future sustainability of the industry, that is a balance that is going to have to be struck as part of looking for a solution to the challenges that face all of us, and hopefully everybody is going to be up to that.
Alan, it seems that most of the parties involved, from the company side to the workers' side, would, or the former workers' side, would like a compensation settlement to avoid a long, drawn-out, protracted legal battle, and especially be in a situation where some of these claimants or some of the people in the class action might actually be passing away before they can even see the fruits of their legal action. But what is it that's holding up further discussions and any sort of firm, concrete talks on a compensation settlement?
Well, I'm not sure of your definition of firm, concrete talks, but there, as I've said, there are talks going on. Naturally, neither I nor the claimant's lawyers can go into detail, but there are very complicated issues at stake, and these need to be sorted out. From our side, we intend to make every effort, and I trust the same will apply to the claimant's lawyers.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. We're talking about silicosis, a disease that's really been plaguing the mining industry for decades and decades. We'll just be going through to Anele Yao, the General Secretary of the Treatment Action Campaign. Anele, can you hear us?
Hello, my brother.
Perfect. Good, good, good. It's good to have you back.
Yes.
Fantastic. Now, Anele, we've been talking for the past, you know, just under an hour around this issue around silicosis and compensation. And I think one voice that perhaps has not been represented too much is the mine workers themselves. And I'm curious if you and your team have spoken to some of the mine workers and their families, and what are they saying about this situation?
Okay, firstly, in Eastern Cape, TAC and Songe around the OR Tambo district are engaging with ex-mine workers and as well as their families and some of the beneficiaries of those who passed away. That's why when we had the hearing about 2 weeks ago, some of the TAC and Songe members, as much as the rest was gathering at the court, the majority of the Eastern Cape and TAC and Songe guys with families and some ex-mine workers were picketing at SEPA offices, at Aidunkwa and at AMTAT. And the feeling is that justice must be served.
I mean, I hear you, Anele, but I mean, something that's been raised by some of these other guests we've had on is that perhaps this justice may compromise the ability of the mining companies to keep doing business and keep providing jobs. Do you think that's a concern of some of the former mine workers and families, that their compensation might, you know, compromise ability of them and their?
I don't want to tell lies. One, as Keith and Songe, we have engaged with some of the unions. Like your NUMSA, your AMCO, and within no time we are planning to have physical meetings with these unions before the 12th of October, because we strongly feel and believe that it is very much important for these unions to take a leadership, because most of these victims or these ex-mine workers were members of these unions, you know. So it is very much important that when you go to court to hear whether are we going to be admitted whether are we going to be certified as a class case, we need to see the faces of the union which used to represent these workers. That's why it is important for us to make sure that when we go to court on this campaign, we need to put the face of the ex-mine workers who are suffering from the silicosis. So, on the side of the mining companies, I am not a politician, but most of the times, what you will hear in South Africa is that if you comment about what is happening in USA or somewhere else, people will tell you that the value of the rand will drop because of this and that. And you will chase away the investors because of this and that, which, in my view, that is a wrong analysis, because most of the time, we as the people of South Africa, we as the poor people, we don't necessarily think about our own needs and the rights. We think about the rights and the needs of the capitalists on the expense of the poor and the marginalized community. So to say so, one has to ask a question: which one is better between the mining companies and the victims who are suffering from silicosis, who are suffering from TB, and who died of silicosis because of what has been done by these mining companies? So which one must be taken forward, which one must be left behind? Because at the end of the day, here we are not merely talking about any other thing more than the constitutional rights of the ex-mine workers, which was grossly violated by these mining companies, simply because their interest is only on capital. It is not in the best interest of the constitutional rights, health rights of these mine workers. So for us, it will be difficult to put ourselves into the shoes of the mining companies. But at the end of the day, these mining companies, they have been operating in our country for more than 5 decades. And by this time, they should have invested a lot of money. So they have to, at some point, compensate these victims of this process and take responsibility. There is no way that we can leave these mining companies to run away with murder. There is no way we can leave these mining companies to continuously create or cause a burden on the health, on the public health system of our country. Because at some point, a truth must be told that when these mining, when these mine workers acquired these silicosis, these mining companies are running away with murder.
I hear you, Anele. Anele, sorry. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. We'll make sure to have you in studio properly next time. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No problem.
Okay, perfect. Fantastic. Alan, your response in 30 seconds.
Well, to respond to the one point he made, certainly the trade unions, organized labor, the representatives, certainly of today's mine workers, are critical stakeholders in the process we are involved in, and we are talking to them too, along with the lawyers and government.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Greg and Alan, thank you for joining me in studio. Please, please, please download the podcast, share it far and wide. You know where to find us every week, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m., the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central.
Informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on CliffCentral.com.